why don't you start by describing where you came from a little bit and what you're involved in and what your interests are?
You want my whole open source resume or just the recent bit?
Why don't we stick to the recent, and I can always go deeper if it's too boring.
Okay, I'm Denise Cooper. I serve on the board of the Open Source Initiative. I have been serving for the last 8 years. And I'm also currently employed by Revolution Computing, which is a startup focusing on an open source language called R, as in the letter R, that is very useful for analytics and statistical analysis. And I'm also an Apache member, and I also serve on an advisory board for Mozilla.
One of the two panels you're going to be speaking on at OSCON is on open source and open government. If you can talk a little bit about what interests you about open government, and also what open government means to you.
Sure. Well, along with a lot of open source people, I got interested in the Obama campaign and in helping President Obama get elected. And part of why he was so compelling was that the vision of how Washington needed to change is pretty close to the way that we think about working collaboratively in open source. The night that he was elected, there's a great little clip on CNET of a Republican commentator actually explaining open source as exactly what I just said. You know, it was a really brilliant little two-minute clip. He pointed at the Cathedral and the Bazaar, that canonical document about how open source works, and he said, you know, this is Microsoft is the cathedral. It's their way or the highway, and the Bazaar is a bunch of people working together to grassroots to collaboratively, you know, build the things that they need. And so Obama's basically asking for the government to become open source. And the problem is Washington isn't really like that right now. So anyway, that's the transformation that has to happen in order for government to really be transparent. To me, open source government is transparent government. I mean, there's been an awful lot of shenanigans in recent political history. Like the last decade has been pretty crazy. In terms of things happening that couldn't be traced back to any source, even just the way we vote, the way that voting is managed, and the fact that the software that runs the machines that we vote on is not open source, so it can't be inspected, and nobody knows quite what it does, and there's all these stories of weird updates to the software that happen right before major elections in states where there are strange results, and, you know, it's just a transparency in the same way that it helped the software industry transform could really help the government transform. So that's what I'm talking about. There's a bunch of other people on that panel. My good friend Brian Bellendorf and I proposed it, and he's actually taken the next step. You know, he helped found Apache, and he's run off to Washington to work on projects that are interesting to the Obama government, try to figure out how to help them to more open source solutions. And he'll be talking about his progress on that panel. So I think it's a pretty exciting panel.
There seems to be this process when people go to Washington that the most idealistic and pure motivated people in the world spend 6 months there and they've turned into Gollum or something. It seems very hard to keep your ethics or if not your ethics, then your vision and get anything done in that town.
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch him work hard to try to get something done that he can talk about. And as recently as last week, he wasn't sure he was going to have anything that he could publicly talk about. And then they finally got through something, and he called me up and very excited and said, okay, put my name back on the panel, you know, all right. So I would say in Brian's case, I'd be very surprised if he compromises his actual vision. It's more... he's a very persistent boy, chipping away at the big machine. And I think there are a lot of people in Washington right now trying to chip away. I think it'd be good if they all worked together. You know, I'd like to see a little more community built around the people who are trying to chip away. I imagine that the status quo in Washington is feeling pretty embattled, and it's probably making it very hard, or making it as hard as they can, for the change to happen. Which we saw in open source as well. I mean, people tried to fire me pretty much every year, the first 5 years I worked for Sun. And then in the sixth year, they all turned around and went, oh, you know, so it's not a quick change. It happens slowly.
there was a lot of hope and promise pinned onto President Obama's shoulders when he took office. Obviously, the open source community and the privacy community and the freedom community all had their vision of what he was going to do. Obviously, any presidency is going to be a mixed bag, partially for the pragmatics of the office and partially for factors we may not know all the story on. But there have been a number of decisions and policies over the last, 6 months that haven't seemed to really hold up to that vision of transparency. How do you see it 6 months in?
Yeah, no, I agree. There have been some decisions that were troubling, and particularly the decision to retain the abrogation of our civil rights as envisioned by the Bush administration in the name of national security. I would like to see that decision rethought. But it is, possible that the last time a president really did a lot of sweeping change of the type that he was talking about, that the country was in such bad shape that people weren't complaining too much about choices that that president made to override checks and balances. This is FDR I'm thinking of. So, I always believed that Obama was going to be a centrist, because he's the first black president. He almost has to show up for everyone in America and not just the progressives. But I also think that his long-term vision is much more the kind of America that I'd like to live in than any of the other options that we've had recently. And so I'm still pretty much behind him. And there's things that we can't actually know the ripple effect of. Simple things like Michelle Obama planting an organic garden in the White House. That's a big deal. I know people around the world that have started thinking about growing food on their land instead of ornamental things because of the highlight that gives to gardening. And then she went the extra mile and said it was going to be an organic garden, not just a garden, right? So we won't know what the overall effects of this first year or 2 years are going to be, or even the first 4 years are going to be.
I actually have a theory that the reason that the Democratic Party is so anxious for Al Franken to get to Washington is not for the 60th vote in the Senate, but because anyone will then become looking less liberal compared to Al Franken.
Yeah, he'll be out there in the edge. That's true. That's true. Anyway, so we're really happy that O'Reilly is so interested in seeing transparency come to government. When Tim and Jeff Bezos went out to Washington to look at the patent system, what was that, 8 years ago now? And they were so discouraged that there wasn't going to be change in our lifetimes because they didn't see working computers on any decision maker's desk, right? I think that's changing in this administration just because they're bringing in a bunch of new people. And interestingly enough, the long-term effects of those kinds of changes and having people like Tim O'Reilly show up and do conferences like Gov2O and also Micah Sifry's Personal Democracy Forum. These are great, great ways to help people focus and keep track of what's important. Because we in this country, we get real excited in election year and then we kind of move on to the next thing until the next election cycle. So it's important to keep that focus.
One of the questions that you get into when you talk about transparency in government is the fact that at the end of the day, there are always going to be things that can't be transparent, and that there are actual legitimate times when they say it's a matter of national security and they mean it. How do you ride that rail and be able to trust them when they say we really can't tell you?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think that anybody who leaves the country and if you want to do a favor for this country, go on vacation somewhere outside of it. Seriously. There was a great campaign here in San Francisco last year. Lonely Planet guides are written here. And on all the buses, there was this big banner campaign that said, do something for your country in big letters. And then in little letters, it said, leave. Right. And I actually think that's true. If you leave this country, you experience how living in a fear-free media feels. You know, there's an awful lot of control through through fear going on still in this country, even under the Obama government, although the media is not as bad as it was during Bush. But we're not actually in the embattled citadel situation that they want us to be in. That justifies the wars that they want us to fund. If you go to other countries, you don't hear. I mean, you hear about stuff that's happening, but it's not, doesn't have that edge of they're coming to get us. You know what I mean? So anyway, I'm not a big fan of the way that the current security administration or any previous security administration in my recent history has been run. I'm sure my security wonk friends would tell me I'm being naive, but oh my goodness. The other thing about leaving the country is going through airports, right? So anytime you have to encounter the TSA, you can experience exactly how absurd security theater can become, right?
So switching gears, the other thing you're talking about and a big part of your professional life is the R language. Now, I will confess that like Erlang, R is something that is on my radar and I see and I look at it and I say, okay, when am I ever going to use it? I mean, Erlang is used some places, but R, I guess, has a very niche-y type of audience, doesn't it?
You know, interestingly enough, that's changing. I think that's been true. R has been in production or in development, let's say, for the last 20 years. It is patterned after the S language, which was developed in the 60s at Bell Labs around the same time that Unix and C were being developed. And, you know, it was S for statistics, right? The R is sort of a if we had known then what we know now version of S. And they've been working on it for 20 years in an academic setting. So it has been a very slow to grow. But just in the last couple of years, it's really gotten to a place where it's ready for enterprise use. And just this year, the people that maintain S, the company called SAS, S-A-S, in the south of America, south of this country, have announced that they're going to have to support R. Like it's that widely used now, particularly in schools. Every CS department, every statistics department uses R because it's free. And there are 200 books written about how to teach statistics in R. And so, you know, it's become kind of a commons lingua franca for people who are using analytic tools and computers, right? We know that there's little bits of R in Wolfram Alpha. We know that R gets used all the time, like by the New York Times, by people who show quantitative data in the popular media, right? And I was quite surprised to discover recently at Predictive Analytics World that Google, LinkedIn, and Facebook all use R to do really exotic things like predict user behavior. So I think Hal Varian said earlier this year, or maybe it was late last year, that statistician is actually the new sexy job in the tech world. Being able to deal with data and make quantitative analysis of it and come to reasonable conclusions that guide business decisions is actually going to be a big deal. And so anyway, we think that R is poised to become much more widely used as the title of quant, you know, the statistician title, becomes a more important job title in the tech world. Of course, there will be more quants and they will be using the tool more. But also we think the alpha geeks will start to use it. We're seeing, we know how to run our product on the cloud, you know, in EC2 and other cloud-related things. We're seeing mashups where there was recently a paper filed where somebody was mashing R with Hadoop. Right. So we're starting to see some interesting and unexpected consequences from the fact that it's open source and freely available. And that's pretty much why I got involved. Looking at, well, back to the question of open government, you know, Vivek Kundra, who's kind of my current open source government hero. I don't know if you know about him, but when he was the CIO of the District of Columbia, he opened 217 data streams, so just routine data that was collected in the district by city, various city services. So everything except where the cops are got opened up, including where the cops have just been, you know, the crime scene thing. But,
right. But we had an interview earlier this year with somebody who mashed up that data to show you the safe bars to go to.
Right, right, right. Yeah, the stumble home thing. So just the fact that they were able to use that by opening that data and creating the mashup opportunity, they got this amazing set of applications that were totally useful. And some of them, not that one, but there were a couple of others that they had earmarked real money to go have built. And they were able to redirect that money back to education because they didn't need to spend it on building the thing anymore, right? So we are starting to see services that offer analytics as a web service along with everything else that you can possibly apply to a data stream. And as more and more data becomes open, they're going to need world-class tools to analyze that data. And right now, R is the only open source tool.
Just to put a little salt on the tail of the thing, and because I'm, again, trying to understand where it fits in, I'm familiar, because God help me, I have a grad school wife, with SPSS, which is kind of the traditional statistical analysis package. And I'm also familiar with, like, analytics packages that go up against OLAP cubes and data warehouses and those type of things. How is this different from those kind of tools?
Well, what SPSS is S with a graphic interface, but it was written 15 years ago. So it's an application. It's not a service that you get over the web, right? It's so it's elderly in that way. It also costs $10,000 a seat. $10,000. A legal seat of SAS costs $35,000. So when open source comes into the picture, when there's that much markup on software that was written a long time ago, where it's pretty much just a profit center, you discover that some of the money, you know, gets squeezed out of the market pretty quickly. It generally tends to level the pricing a little bit. And what has to happen is the open source tool has to be good enough. Right. This is what happened with Linux. Linux was a toy until all of a sudden it was good enough to run financial services houses that didn't want to pay the premium for Solaris anymore. And we're right at that inflection point with R, where it's just finally gotten good enough that it can go up against some of these, you know, well-established, expensive tools. Does that make sense?
Sure. Do you have to be a statistician to know how to use it?
Well, you do right now, but that's one of the things that we're working on, is how to make it more available to more people, because it's a pretty powerful tool. The tricky bit seems to be how to formulate your question in such a way that you can put the right data in the right part of the equation to get the right output, right? But I'm continually surprised by people who are using R. Since I started caring about it, you know, I have these casual conversations with my friends. My good friend Ben Laurie, who's a security wonk at Apache and at Google, uses it for his hobby of creating fantasy knots. He's into this, what if a protein could be bent the following ways to create an interesting shape? And he uses a graph that he produced using R to look for anomalies in the shape equation that tell him where there might be an interesting knot to look at. You know, I mean, how cool is that? He said, "What are you working on now?" I said, "R." He said, "Oh," and he pulled down a book. You know, I'm starting to see it in some very interesting places. So for me, the beauty of open source, I mean, I love it that it takes what open source did and what transparency will do for government, hopefully, is in the software industry, the producers of software had basically lost touch with their commercial customers. They started telling their customers what they wanted instead of asking them what they wanted. "No, no, no, you don't want this. You want this other thing that we just wrote that we're going to charge you a lot of money for." And that disconnect is what allowed open source to, you know, come in the way it did. The developers who wrote open source software were writing to fit exactly the need that they wanted to fit. And they happened to be a customer base. So in the first approximation, it was a customer revolt involving people writing their own stuff, the customers writing their own stuff. But it got to a point, an inflection point, where it was good enough that people that weren't capable of writing it could actually make use of it, right? And then we see companies like Canonical coming in and putting user interfaces on the top of Linux that make it usable by my mom, right? So that's going to happen to R as well. And probably to a lot of other open source stuff. And in the same way, we're going to see interfaces for, if we do it properly, for the general public in America to have a better touch points with the government to give better feedback that isn't money driven, you know, so that the real things that need to happen or the things that people really actually care about that aren't necessarily tied to somebody's pocket, but are much more directly needs-based will emerge. Those are the kinds of things that need to happen. So anyway, I hope that tied it all together.
Yep. It's definitely done.
Hey.
I had one other question just about the whole SPSS thing, because again, I've gotten more than my fill of it over the last year. We actually tried to swap out PSPP for it, which is the open source equivalent. And yeah. You find very quickly that unless it is an absolute feature for feature, bug for bug equivalent to SPSS, it can't be used. They've got a real lock hold, don't they?
Well, you don't do query for query, right? People used to say this about Windows. You know, when we first did OpenOffice, I don't know if you know that I was involved in creating the OpenOffice project at Sun. And we did it for competitive reasons because we were suing Microsoft and we knew that it was going to hurt them, right? But I was also interested in doing it because it created an opportunity for the world to have access to productivity software in their own language, because we made it localizable. And so a group of people could, in Romania, for instance, could get together and spend a weekend and produce a version of OpenOffice that was in Romanian so that their moms didn't have to learn English in order to learn how to use a computer. We thought that was really, really going to be a powerful thing, right? So the interesting thing is, for a long time there, we would get notes from people who would say, I really want to use OpenOffice, but it's going to make me less productive because I know how to use Office. And we get things from bosses who would say, we want to switch the Office over, but our secretaries are telling us that they won't use it because they won't be able to get their work done. And, you know, we came up with, there was a forum about how to get your company to switch. And I always thought, gee, offer them the bonus of the cost of the legal license of Microsoft for 1 year and see if they aren't interested in switching at that point, you know, and a surprising number of them were. And we found even some pretty sophisticated users like the French Foreign Ministry of Finance exclusively uses OpenOffice, even though there is actually Office in French and they could use it. You know, they chose to do the other thing. I just saw that the London Stock Exchange is switching off of Microsoft as well. So around the world, there have been people who did the analysis. There's a little bit of a switching cost, and this is going to happen as well with SPSS and R. There's a little bit of a switching cost, but for every person who has learned how to use SPSS in the last 5 years, there is a new pledged class of kids that have just been taught statistics using R. And it's really surprising how overwhelmingly deeply taught it is. It depends on the department that you sit in. And we're finding, for instance, at Stanford, the poli-sci guys use SPSS, but the CS people use R, right? So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But you're right. You can never do a feature-for-feature swap, and I don't think we'd want to get in that business. It's a tough business to be in. It's better to leapfrog past it to the next thing that everybody wants to do. You know what I'm saying?
Right. We got as far with her professor as saying to get him to look at it, but then we like hit ANCOVA or something like that, and PSP wouldn't do it, and that was the end of the game.
Yeah, well, try again, because that's a process, right? It took a really, really, really long time to make the switches that we've made in fundamental software companies. It took a long time for them to understand why they want to make the switch. There's still lots of companies where they talk about open source, but they actually don't do the engineering in an open source way because they can't quite get their heads around that process switch, you know. And then we see little startup companies that work completely agile, completely open, and are sort of cleaning up in terms of user base, I mean. So, you know, if user base is the new currency, then it's a different race than it was before.
So to finish up, you are going to be presenting two different panels at OSCON. I was wondering if there's anything you're particularly looking forward to seeing at OSCON.
Well, I always want to see Tim's keynote. You know, always, always. It's always interesting to see what Tim's thinking about. I saw him doing Ignite last month in Sebastopol, and it was the best talk I've seen him do in a while. Let's see, what else? I don't care as much about the rest of the industry keynotes, the big industry keynotes. It'll be interesting to see, I guess, if they have anything new to say, but I'll be surprised. Deborah Bryant is also doing a panel about open source and government, and she has a different group of people than I do coming to her panel. She's talking about people who are actually employed by the government now, who are making small shifts or large shifts or incremental shifts. And I've got people who are trying to push the football further on, but taking a longer view, if you know what I'm saying. So I'm going to be interested to go to her panel. There's another panel about R, or another talk about R that isn't the one that we're doing. That'll be interesting. I think Beautiful Data, the new book, is about to come out, and I think it'll be interesting to see stuff that relates to that, along with an interest in transparency in government. The O'Reilly folks have a newfound interest in data, I notice. Open data, the beauty of data, where the value is in data. Tim figured out a couple of years ago that the value that open source squeezed out of the software stack just went to data, right? So he's interested in an open data definition. We're going to talk about that in the OSI meeting that we'll have at OSCON. So, you know, I think there's a lot of interesting stuff going on right now. I keep thinking open source is going to get boring, and then, you know, another year rolls around and there's still plenty of stuff to talk about.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, and we look forward to seeing you at OSCON.
Hey, sure. Thanks. It was really fun.